And my next guest, last week I was fortunate enough to be in conversation with the two lead characters from the hit play, Homefront, CJ Lindsay and Austin Highsmith, which is now playing, the show is now playing at the Victory Theater in Burbank. And again, I'd shared that I was going to be fortunate enough to have the third cast member as well as the playwright here today, and they joined me. Kamal, do we have... Yes, wonderful. So we have Jonathan Slavinen on the joining us for conversation. We'll have Jonathan. Warren, you know what? Bring Warren in. We're just going to roll with this. Jonathan was the third cast member of Homefront, and he was not feeling well, but he did say he was going to try to make it on the call with us today. So let's go with just, let's just roll with Warren. Mr. Warren Light, are you there?
I'm here. It's amazing. How are you?
Listen, it has been an interesting Saturday over here. I tell you, I don't think we've ever had a Saturday like this one. We have not had a Saturday like with this one, but it's okay because you know what, Warren, this is what I know. Everything happens the way that it's supposed to. And I have learned at 55 years young to not get flustered and upset about things that I cannot control. And what I can control is when people call, don't call in when they say they're going to. So here's what I am grateful for. I'm grateful that I get to talk to you. I'm grateful that you did this powerful, powerful piece for Homefront, that you wrote this script. Before I talk to you about the play, though, I want to tell the audience a little bit about you, right? You won a Tony Award for Best Play, Side Man, in 1999. And that same year, you were a Pulitzer finalist. You served as showrunner and executive producer of Law and Order, SVU, which under your leadership became the longest running U.S. primetime drama in history. And because you have so many more accomplishments, I'm just going to invite you all to Google him, follow him on Twitter. There's so much more to know about this amazing career of Mr. Warren Light. But today we're talking about his stage play, which is as in my opinion, is as disturbing as it is delightful. It explores the ugliness of racism while also exploring the beauty of love. And so I like those conflicts and those complexities in the play. And that was part of what had me sitting on the edge of my seat and saying, I need to talk to him. So, Warren, can you talk to us a little bit about how you came to write this script?
Well, first of all, that was a beautiful way of describing the play, so thank you for that. I really appreciated that. Because, yes, if it were just the pain, it would be too hard
much
to take,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So try for some humor and some warmth, you know, try to do that. Your last guest was talking about reimagining iconic moments.
Yeah.
And in a way, one of the things that was a springboard for the play was that famous photo of the kiss in Times Square, of the sailor kissing a nurse on VJ Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that photo, and I thought about what would have happened if that had been, and that photo went all over the world, and we still use it today as an image. And I thought, what would have happened if that were to have been an interracial couple, that moment had been an interracial kiss?
Mm.
Would we have viewed that photo the same way? Certainly not then, and I don't think we would even now. So that was a sort of a visual that I had in mind writing the play. And then I also, you know, I grew up in New York, and I was the son of a jazz musician. So I led a kind of life where I knew a lot of interracial couples growing up, and
yeah.
I knew how. Look, any relationship is difficult, but to be in an interracial relationship in America in the 60s was a difficult path.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked to some, I also was very close. A friend of mine was the kid across the street that I hung out with a lot. She was biracial from an interracial marriage that had floundered. And I knew her very well growing up. So I knew that there were a lot of people I wanted to write about. The third character in the play, whom Jonathan plays, is based on my uncle Edward, who was also a gay medic in World War II. So there were, these people had been humming around in the back of my head for a long time, and mm-hmm. it takes me a long time to write these things, and it takes me a long you saw the play, that first scene I wrote first, that romantic first scene of the couple meeting on VJ night. The play opens with it's VJ night in a bar, and everyone's celebrating, and our a black naval officer, and there were only 13 black naval officers in World War II.
We're going to talk about the Golden 13, too. We're going to get there. Yep.
Well, good, good. So we have the officer meeting a war widow in a bar on a night of infinite possibility, and I wrote that scene first, and everyone, I did it in an evening of one act, and people said, "Oh, you've got to turn it into a play," and I almost didn't want to because I knew where it would go for them, or it was this sweet romantic scene, and I knew things would get tough for them after that moment, but eventually, over 20 years, I did it.
Really? Now, let me say this. It's interesting because, as I was watching it and taking it in, I thought about how they both appeared to be smitten with each other initially, right? And even though the officer, as a black man, had this reluctance about him that said, she almost is forbidden fruit, right? I know I'm feeling these butterflies, but she's almost forbidden fruit. And she just appears to not even, she cares, but she doesn't care, right? So that was the first kind of dynamic for me as I'm taking in the play that, there's this guy that knows this might not be a good idea. And then there's this woman that says, I really don't give a damn.
That's right. See, I mean, he's from the South. He's from South Carolina,
yeah.
And he grew up in a Jim Crow world, and he's nervous.
Yeah.
And she's just running through the stop signs.
I like the way you phrased that, running through the stop signs, yes, with not a care in the world, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that night was so magical that people dropped their cares.
Mm-hmm.
The war had really taken a toll on people, and they'd lived under that for 4 years, and it was over.
Yeah.
And I think with that relief came sort of a release of inhibitions, is how I try to explain it to people who wonder. But I think she's just she's alive that night, and she has not let herself breathe for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
so,
and when I think about it, as I was watching it, I'm a risk taker, right? And I go all in for love. Like, I love love. Anybody that knows me, anybody that's listening to this show, know that I love love, right? And so if I'm going to cash all the chips in for anything, it is going to be love. And that was another reason why this play resonated so powerfully with me, because I like the fact that she was willing to take the risk and she was willing to do whatever it took to have the man that her heart told her she needed.
Yeah, she's the two men in the play have served in World War II, but she's maybe the bravest.
She,
in a funny sort of way, on that night she takes the biggest risk,
mm-hmm.
and he's there's a moment where they dance and they're wondering if are your friends looking at me?
Right.
Are my friends looking at me?
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Can we talk a little bit about Jonathan Sloman's character? Unfortunately, I'm not sure what happened. He didn't make it to talk with us today. But his character, Edward, I love the add of him. He was exceptional as much as Austin and CJ were. But the way he guarded her, the way he protected her, the way he befriended her, I thought that was really beautiful. Did it take you a long time to come up with how he was going to play the role in Annie's life?
Well, it's funny. He was a medic in World War II, and that's he's a caretaker. So mm-hmm. I knew also from my uncle, who had been in the battle that the play refers to, the Battle of Biche, and had been wounded there. I knew a lot about as he says in the play, I didn't really save people; I just cradled them while they were dying.
Yes, yes, yeah.
But he's drawn, I think, innately drawn to sort of people in moments of crisis or in moments of need or loneliness. You know, that's his, you know, I think that's how these two are sort of, if there's really nobody else in there for the two characters in our play except for Edward.
Yeah.
They're on their own. The families of, you know, imagine Annie's family is racist, and she what's left of her family couldn't possibly understand the decision she's made, and James is afraid to tell his five sisters what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, so they're on their own, and Edward appears and is there for them, and it also fulfills his need to be
useful, needed, right? Because he appeared to be the guy who gets great comfort. From the moment he knocked on the door and inserted himself into her house and into her, when she opened the door, you knew he was going to be a staple in her life.
Yeah, I think he, you know, that was fun to watch that moment. What in rehearsal, it's just like, just come in.
Yeah.
She's going to try and close the door, but you don't care.
Yeah, right.
You're coming in, you know. And he's a little bit alone too, right? He's back from the war. He's wounded.
Yeah.
He doesn't have, and he's a gay man in New York in 1945, mm-hmm. which is another disenfranchised person in the play.
Exactly.
You know, he's sort of out, but that's not something that there's not a community of that anywhere, and not in New York at that time. Yeah.
Right.
You know, he says, "I knew I was different, and I knew that meant I would always be alone."
Mm.
Which is what that meant at that time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I guess that's how he could also comfort Annie so well, because when her husband was away, whether it was when he was incarcerated or when he was in a mental institution, he was there to be with her so that she, I guess, couldn't feel the loneliness that he felt. Let me ask you this. One of the writers from People's World recently wrote, "Homefront is tout drama, magnificently enacted by three very accomplished actors who totally own their characters, or is it that characters own them?" My question for you is, what's your take? And as someone who's been in the acting drama world for quite some time, ideally, is it your desire for the actor to own the character or for the character to own the actor?
Well, you know, I read that quote, and that's a really lovely question. I was so, that quote grabbed me because something happens when you're doing your job as a writer. Eventually, the actors have to take the character away from you.
Mm.
They know their characters, right? They know their characters better than others. That's their focus. Why am I doing this? When they start asking questions that some writers get annoyed by, that I usually like, you know, like, why am I doing this? And it was important. I got very lucky with this cast because they all have lived aspects of their characters.
Yes.
You know, and I didn't know that at the start, but Austin is in an interracial marriage.
Yep.
CJ, I met CJ's parents. They sat behind me on opening night. I was very nervous. But CJ comes from an interracial marriage, and Jonathan is very outspoken in the
queer community.
In LA.
Absolutely. Hold that thought, Warren. When we come forward, yes. When we come forward more with Warren, he is the playwright for Homefront, Warren Light. I am so honored and grateful that he's here with me. This is Mashay Duffy. You are listening to KBLA Talk 1580.
More KBLA Talk 1580's all-new weekend lineup when we come forward.
President Biden won't be sitting down for the traditional Super Bowl pregame interview with a network airing the big game. The White House says Fox declined its offer for Biden to be interviewed on its Fox Soul streaming service geared to black viewers. It appears Fox wanted the interview to be conducted with top personalities from Fox News. Anchors from the news network said earlier this week the administration has yet to agree to the request for the presidential interview.
I don't know if you could take it. No, you want to see me naked, naked, naked.
Rihanna is preparing for her big Super Bowl halftime performance this Sunday. The pop star said in an interview ahead of the show that things are coming together. She says performing on such a large stage after a long time is exhilarating. Rihanna added representation is important to her, and she's excited that her son will see that. The singer welcomed her baby in May of last year. And that's the latest. I'm Natasha Williams on your home for 24/7 News, the Black Information Network, and BINnews.com.
Hi, I'm Kyle. My company is Blindster.com. I started Blindster in 2010 to provide custom blinds, shades, and shutters at affordable prices. Our blinds are easy to install and shipping is free. Don't hire an expensive professional. Do it yourself and save big at Blindster.com.
This is a rather bold pronouncement, but we think we can back it up.
Back it up.
If you come across a radio frequency anywhere putting more variety and more diversity on the air than KBLA Talk 1580, we sure would like to hear about your discovery.
You got to have vision.
You can search. We are confident that you won't find more shows covering more topics, hosted by a more diverse and inclusive lineup of talkers than the squad we have assembled here at KBLA Talk 1580.
This is the time, brothers. This is the time.
We've got something for everybody.
That's right.
Health and healing, history and humor, issues and events, empowerment and entertainment, all in one station.
What's really going on?
Free enterprise, you dig?
KBLA Talk 1580.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We got a lot to talk about.
King Kong ain't got on me, on me, on me.
KBLA Talk 1580 would like to thank all of the businesses that tune in to KBLA at work. We celebrate you, your calls to the station, and your overall support. To show our appreciation, we would like to treat your office to lunch for 10, sponsored by John O'Groats family-owned restaurant and johnogroats.us. Open the KBLA Talk 1580 app or log on to kbla1580.com to submit your office to be selected for our Office of the Week. We know you're just like our staff, putting in many hard, smart working hours per week. We just want to say thank you, and we appreciate you. You and your staff deserve lunch on us. Enter your office to win lunch for 10 and be highlighted on KBLA Talk 1580 as our Office of the Week. Open the KBLA app or log on to kbla1580.com to enter your office today. To become the KBLA Talk 1580 Office of the Week, sponsored by John O'Groats family-owned restaurant and johnogroats.us. Become the KBLA Talk 1580 Office of the Week. This has been a KBLA Talk 1580 community call to action.
I'll second guest dinners with friends because they can be interrupted by diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or oily stools. It turns out I have EPI, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, which means I'm missing the enzymes needed to digest food. My doctor prescribed Creon pancrelipase, an oral prescription medication that replaces pancreatic digestive enzymes. Creon treats EPI due to cystic fibrosis, chronic pancreatitis, pancreatectomy, or other conditions.
Creon may increase your chance of fibrosing colonopathy, a rare bowel disorder. Tell your doctor if you have a history of intestinal blockage or scarring or thickening of your bowel wall, if you're allergic to pork, or if you have gout, kidney problems, or worsening of painful swollen joints. Call your doctor if you have any unusual or severe gastrointestinal symptoms or allergic reactions. Take Creon as directed by your doctor and always with food. Do not chew capsules, as this may cause mouth irritation. Other side effects may include blood sugar changes, gas, dizziness, sore throat, and cough. These are not all the side effects of Creon.
Creon is the number one prescribed EPI treatment. Ask your doctor about Creon for EPI and visit creoninfo.com or call 800-633-9110 to learn more. That's creoninfo.com.
KBLA Talk 1580.
We've got a lot to talk about.
KBLA Talk 1580, reminding you that we keep us safe. The Center for the Pacific Asian Family was founded to help address domestic violence and sexual assault in the Asian and the Pacific Islander communities. The Center for the Pacific Asian Family's mission is to build healthy and safe communities by addressing the root causes and consequences of family violence and violence against women. They are committed to meeting the specific cultural and language needs of the Asian and Pacific Islander women and their families. CPAF's vision is of an Asian and Pacific Islander community that embraces healthy relationships and works in partnership with other communities to eradicate all forms of violence. To access services, volunteer, or for more info, visit nurturingchange.org. At KBLA Talk 1580, we believe everyone deserves to be safe. This is a community call to action from KBLA Talk 1580.
Hi, this is Tavis.
Tavis, this is Dr. King. We've got a lot to talk about.
I'll be in town on the 28th of February. Can you clear your calendar?
Absolutely, Dr. King. Good Lord, do I have some questions for you, sir.
Hi, it's Tavis.
Assalamu alaikum, my brother. This is Minister Malcolm. Now, I heard that you and Martin are getting together for a public dialogue on February 28th. You see, now, I already know the date. Now, I know y'all not trying to keep me out of that conversation, are you?
No, sir. No, sir.
What happened to George Floyd shouldn't happen, not even to a dog. How long must the Negro continue to endure this foolishness at the hands of law enforcement? People can take but so much before they reach a breaking point.
What do you mean, Black Lives Matter? Black lives haven't mattered in this country since Negroes stopped working for free at the end of slavery. You ought to be talking about Black Guns Matter and start your own NRA. Call it the Negro Revolutionary Amalgamation.
Don't miss this compelling historic radio event. The Return. When Tavis Smiley converses with Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. Tuesday, February 28th, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, exclusively on KBLA Talk 1580. Thanks for spending some quality time with us and checking out the new weekend talk shows only on KBLA Talk 1580.
I love that song. Speaking of which, listening to that song, it makes me ask you this question. I know, Warren, before the break, we were talking about whether the actors have the character or the character have the actors. I do want to get back to that. But really quickly, tell us how you came to name it Homefront.
Oh, well, you know, I once called the play James and Annie, which was... But it didn't tell us enough about what the play was about, and it left Edward out. I just thought how the war had ended overseas, but on the home front, the war was still going.
Mm.
The war for inclusion.
Mm.
And that basement apartment that they're stuck in, trapped in a sense, becomes another. Combat zone as it goes on.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So back to, and Warren, if you don't mind, I was fortunate enough to get Jonathan.
Great.
So he's going to join us now. Jonathan, are you there?
I am here.
Yay! Hi, Jonathan.
How are you feeling?
This COVID thing is like, it's determined to attack every system I have, but I'm fighting the good fight.
Well, we are thankful that you are here with us. And if you only want to be here for 10 minutes, that's fine. You can let us know when you got to go. But I just thank you. And this is why I wanted you on. I wanted to just honor what you bring to this play. I wanted to honor you as Edward and the love and the friendship and the care that you exhibited to Annie. And it's just so reminiscent of what we need in the world today, for sure. But it's certainly what we need when we're battling things like inequity and racism and oppression. And so, you know, for the short time I have you, I want to know, are you much like Edward? Because I get the sense that you are.
I think that I very much relate to Edward. We have a lot in common, including some of our shortcomings and some of our short-sightedness. But I think I try very hard to operate from a place, I fail certainly, but from a place of empathy, from a place of compassion, from a place of understanding that we are all beings in pain and in struggle, and that if we can view each other that way, then perhaps we can each do our part to be there for each other and lessen each other's pain. And that's sort of very much how I try to live in this world. And like I said, I fail miserably and I can sometimes be a horrible person, but I try really hard not to be.
Mm-hmm. The other piece that is the commonality between you and Edward is that you are a gay man, and you mm-hmm. have you are a very strong advocate for inclusion, right, for LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
And so when you got the script, was it an immediate yes for you given that, or was there any reluctance when you read the script?
No, it was an immediate yes. I wasn't really looking to do a play. And when Austin sent it to me, I was mad because it was so good that I wanted to do it. and I was, you know, I was planning on reading it and going, no, it's great.
Sorry.
No, I just ran out of time. And I know, Warren, this is all Warren's fault. And, you know, I try very hard, and again, I fail, but I am definitely an advocate for inclusion and for queer inclusion, LGBTQ plus inclusion, absolutely. But I try very hard to be an advocate for inclusion of all marginalized people
yeah.
and understand that I think that, you know, one of the tenets of this country that has been really demonstrated is that the people who are in charge, who have the most power, what they're really good at is putting one extra chair at the table and telling all the marginalized folks to fight over it.
Mm.
And instead of looking at all the chairs that they're occupying and going, no, we all just need more chairs.
Yes.
And so, and I think that it has bred a lot of conflict between marginalized communities because we're all scrambling to get that one chair.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I try to do my best to understand intersectionality with all marginalized groups sort of across the plane
yeah.
and know that, you know, what do they say until we are all free, we are none of us free.
Absolutely.
And I, you know, I try very hard to remember that.
Amen. That was very beautifully said. Mm. That is so very true too. And Warren, to that end, I have a couple of questions. One would be, when you hear Jonathan say that the script was so good, he was upset with you. I know that makes you happy. How do you feel about that? Is that what you want? Is that what you wanted the response to be to anybody who read your script?
Well, yeah, all writers would love that response, but I can't believe how, just listening to Jonathan talk, you realize how lucky I got that he was the one who read the play, and that it spoke to him,
mm-hmm.
because he's just a great advocate for Edward in the play.
Yeah,
and we were talking about, does the character own the actor, or does the actor own the character? And I think over time it's a little of both.
Mm-hmm.
But he just he protects Edward, he protects Annie, and even I don't think James would see it that way, but he's trying to protect James,
mm-hmm.
you know, with some other issues mixed in there. So, yeah, I got very lucky with all three members of the cast because of, you know, the right people respond to the play.
Yeah.
There's some people who would have been afraid of the part or not wanted to go there, and the right actors are the ones who read it and go, oh, I have to do this.
But, you know, I feel like I just finished rereading The Secret, right, guys? And I feel like the universe really conspired with you, Warren, and with all of you in different ways, because you have this script that you talk about on Twitter. Then Austin asks you if she can see the script and shop it around here. And then what you don't know is that CJ is somewhere saying to his wife, I really want to be in a play, and I want to be in a period piece in particular. And then you have this amazing advocate in Jonathan. And so it's almost like they were all waiting, and the universe just aligned it up so beautifully so that this could happen 20 years from the time you wrote it, and we all could be blessed by watching it.
I know. That's what you said earlier. Things happen when they happen. And,
yeah.
Every time I forget that, I have to relearn it. I get frustrated waiting and all that. But,
yeah.
And I think we got lucky with this particular theater and this wonderful director, Maria Gobetti,
yeah.
Who just seemed to, there's just no false notes in her direction.
Mm.
You know, and it was like a blind date with
three actors, one director, and a writer, and it just worked out.
I love it. I love it. I want to ask this. Jonathan kind of teed this up for us, but Warren, when we go through your Twitter feed, we learn that you care about politics and you care about history. Recent, I'm sure there are other things you care about, but those are the two things that stood out for me, right? And recently you tweeted, defend Black history, in response to Haymark Books saying that Florida has become a laboratory for fascism in terms of how they're systematically removing any traces of Black history from schools and libraries. And we all are appalled by that. I'm wondering, what makes you care so much, right? And what do you think we all should be doing that maybe we're not doing as we watch this unfold? When we come forward, we're going to hear Warren's answer, and anything Jonathan want to add, may want to chime in. When we come forward, this is KBLA Talk 1580.
A safe place to go loud, loud.
A great place for progressive politics.
KBLA Talk 1580.
Will Smith and Martin Lawrence confirm Bad Boys 4 is in the works. Maisha Cairo here with your K-Black Minute News, brought to you by Blendustry. The film Bad Boys 4, Bad Boys for Life, is in pre-production. Take a listen to the viral announcement by Will Smith and Martin Lawrence themselves.
It's about that time.
It's about that time,
it's
y'all.
It's official, y'all.
Y'all know what it is, right?
It's official. Bad Boys for Life, baby!
I'm Maisha Cairo, and that's your K-Black Minute News.
Thanks to our new sponsor, Blendustry. Blendustry is a national Black-led small business lender that is headquartered in Los Angeles. Blendustry helps small business owners access the affordable capital needed to grow. Visit Blendustry, LendustryKBLA today. Thanks to our new sponsor, Blendustry. Blendustry is a national Black-led small business lender that is headquartered in Los Angeles. Blendustry helps small business owners access the affordable capital needed to grow. Visit Blendustry, LendustryKBLA today.
At Cedars-Sinai, we're honored to be named the number one hospital in California and the number two hospital in the nation in U.S. News & World Report's Best Hospitals Honor Roll. We're also proud to be named number one in six specialties in Los Angeles. Thank you to our physicians, nurses, academic leaders, and thousands of other team members who bring their best to Cedars-Sinai every day. Learn more about our top-ranked care at cedars-sinai.org.
Every story has a backstory.
You're listening to The Backstory.
With Michelle Duffy on KBLA Talk 1580.
Indeed, every story does have a backstory, and we're talking about the backstory of the state, the hit stage play Homefront, which has been extended until February the 29th, so you still have time to get your tickets and take it in. It's at the Victory Theater in Burbank, and when I tell you it's an amazing production, I mean it's an amazing production. Warren and Jonathan, before the break, I was saying, as we sit here in the midst of Black History Month, what concerns you the most about what Republican Governor Ron DeSantis and others of his ilk is doing to try to erase Black history as we know it?
Well, it's horrifying to me what's going on right now. The banning of books that, what did I see yesterday? They took a biography of Roberto Clemente off of a children's library in a grade school. You know, this desire to deny America's history, to refuse to teach, all other history is valid, but African American history is not valid in Florida now. What are they trying to do? What's going on? And so, you know, this play, I spent a lot of time researching the history of what it was like to be a returning Black soldier in America after World War II, and I was saddened to learn that how aggressively Jim Crow swung back into power in the South. And it's a story that needs to be told, and people need to know our nation's history, or we're not going to move forward.
Yeah.
And if you deny what's happened, and it's more convenient to deny it, it's easier not to know the truth when the truth is filled with so much bloodshed and hatred. But if you deny it, it just enables things to happen again.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going on right now. It's really profoundly disturbing that this is the new hill these people want to die on. They want to stop books. They want to stop the teaching of our country's history.
And when you talk about history, you know, the sad thing is, you said a moment ago, if we don't know it, we're bound to repeat it. If we don't know that one of the ways dictators start to be develop dictatorships is to censor what people read, see, hear, so that they can censor how they think or predict how they think, then that's where and how it begins, right? And so we cannot sit on our laurels and say, well, it hasn't hit our state or it hasn't hit our city, so we shouldn't be doing anything. No, we need to be actively engaged and connected and committed to doing something about this, because if we don't, we're going to look up and it's going to be from state to state to state. Jonathan, what are your thoughts about what you see?
I'm horrified. You know, I have a couple thoughts, unsurprisingly. So I will say, you know, first and foremost, I was raised very Jewish, and I remember my rabbi talking about that there's some evidence that Hitler did not even begin his life in as a particularly strong anti-Semite. What he did was he capitalized on the anti-Semitism that was already present in the German culture, and just didn't care about all of the bodies that he was going to create. It was all about power for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that has been a lot of what's been going on, which is that I think that these people, the Ron DeSantis's and the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boebert's of the world, are, they're taking a gamble. And what they're doing is they are speaking to people who are desperately trying to hold on to their white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And saying to them, if we learn, like, don't you want to go back to the way it was? And no one is saying, but you're the only people that it was working for.
Yeah.
That the way it was working for. Like, I always say I'm an elder queer. And so, like, I grew up in a time when, like, don't say gay was the law of the land. Like, no one taught me about my identity. No one taught me about my history. No one taught me anything. And it didn't make me any less gay. It just made me feel more alone, more suicidal, more marginalized. It made me more of a target for actual predators and actual predation. It was a disaster. It didn't work in the way that they're saying that it's going to work.
Yeah.
And the other thing to remember is that the fact that we are not taught our history as marginalized people is not an accident.
Yeah.
That's not something that just happened. That's a system that has been set up. That I didn't know who Marsha P. Johnson was until I went out in the world and educated myself is not an accident.
Yeah.
You know, that Black people in this country are not given their history and not taught things that is a system that is designed to keep us and all marginalized folks down.
And that's why I love writers and authors, and I love what Warren Light was bold enough to do with this piece, because we have to tell the stories regardless of who want to hear them, who's uncomfortable by them. I love Isabel Wilkerson's cast, The Origins of Our Discontent, which Ava DuVernay is now making into a movie, because she goes through this so thoroughly, how all of this happens and why it's important that we make sure it does not continue. When we come forward, my remaining 2 moments with these beautiful two gentlemen from Homefront. This is Miche Duffy. You are listening to KBLA Talk 1580.
Stay tuned for more of
The Backstory.
The Backstory. The Backstory
with Miche Duffy on KBLA Talk 1580.
Central Neighborhood Health Foundation is a full-service network of federally qualified health care centers that serves local communities throughout Los Angeles, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties. CNHF clinics provide low-cost to no-cost, compassionate, comprehensive, quality health care, which includes primary care services for chronic disease and diabetes management, pediatric and women's services, preventive care, vision and dental screenings, COVID-19 testing and vaccines, flu vaccines, behavioral health, HIV and substance use services. Virtual telehealth visits are available from the comfort of your home with highly qualified physicians and medical professionals. CNHF also provides peer support specialist training and help with housing navigation. Central Neighborhood Health Foundation. Your wellness is our priority. Comprehensive care built on trust and respect. For more information, visit cnhfclinics.org or call 213-536-5815 today to locate a clinic near you.
Look.
Our Weekly Los Angeles is the largest audited black newspaper in the state of California, with a distribution of over 50,000 copies weekly. Pick up a copy every Thursday to get the latest news on African-American communities of L.A. You can also keep up with what's going on in Los Angeles and surrounding cities by going to www.ourweekly.com. The Our Weekly website is updated daily with the current news about us and for us. For your advertising needs, Our Weekly offers economical advertising packages to fit your budget. Feel free to call Our Weekly Los Angeles at 323-905-1300 or visit the website at www.ourweekly.com. Our Weekly Los Angeles, reporting news that matters to you.
Hi.
Who's this?
Buzz. He appears whenever you eat Honey Nut Cheerios.
Like a genie?
Sure.
Ooh, does he grant wishes? I wish I lived in a giant boot. No, I wish I could swim with a humpback whale. No.
I can grant you a delicious bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios, which can help lower cholesterol as part of a heart-healthy diet.
Ooh, with heart shapes, too.
Happy Heart-Shaped Cheerios are back for a limited time. Pick up a box of Honey Nut Cheerios at your local store for an easy, delicious, and heart-healthy start to your day.
The Venture X card from Capital One gives you premium travel benefits, perfect for seeing Taylor Swift the Eras Tour. Presented by Capital One. Ooh, I do love her. Earn 5x miles on flights and 10x miles on hotels through Capital One Travel.
Enjoy your stay in Suite 13.
Whoa, 13? That's Taylor's lucky number. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Now back to more of the all-new weekend lineup here on KBLA Talk 1580.
Indeed, we are back. This is Michelle Duffy. I am in conversation with Jonathan Slavin and Warren Light. Both are with the production Homefront that's currently playing in Burbank. In my last, minute and a half here, I said we were going to talk really quickly about the Golden 13. Warren, can you just give us 30 seconds of the Golden 13 and who they are and how you came to know about them?
Sure. Again, another piece of history that gets overlooked at times.
Yeah.
In World War II, you know, the when the war broke out, the Navy had 100,000 black naval members of the Navy, and none of them were above deck. None of them got topside. Yeah. They were all stewards and cooks. And Eleanor Roosevelt and others started to put pressure on the Navy. There was a lot of pressure for the armed services to open up during World War II. A lot of pressure, well placed to start the Army. Army was the first to I don't know if so much.
Warren,
they
I got like 10
but they
seconds.
Allowed
people,
mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So 13 naval officers were allowed to step up and become the first black naval officers in American history.
Yep.
But the Navy was so afraid, they didn't let them see combat because they thought that people underneath them would be insubordinate.
Gotcha.
But they were the first black naval officers.
Amen.
In the nation's history.
Listen, guys, we ran out of time here. That's okay. But listen, Jonathan and Warren, I love you both so much. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're wonderful to give this play the support you've been giving it. Really
absolutely.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. You guys can take good care, okay?
You too.
Bye, Jonathan. Feel better.
All right.
Bye.
Absolutely. Jonathan, feel better. Okay. Thank you to my guest. Again, this has been The Backstory with Michelle Duffy. Up next is Cafe Mocha with Yo-Yo, Lonnie Love, and Angelique Perrin. Of all the ways you could have spent the last hour, I'm grateful you spent it with me and Unapologetically Progressive KBLA Talk. Thanks so much. Listen, until next week, stay grateful, stay inspired, and stay safe.
KBLA 1580 Santa Monica.